Today on The Grave Talks, the paranormal paramedic.
It's a long way back. The phantom scream that lies in wait for me. The night awakens all my demons. I can't go back.
As a child, Chris Bellisone learned early on that the dead aren't far away. After a surprise interaction with his deceased grandfather, his interest in the paranormal was piqued. As he grew, his passion for the paranormal didn't disappear, but didn't have direction either. Then, in the early 2000s, Chris found a way to dive back into his supernatural curiosity and began investigating. Combining his medical knowledge as a paramedic with his knowledge of the paranormal, Chris has made some compelling discoveries about how our bodies react to the dead. But it all starts as a child.
I was at my grandmother's house. She lived in a townhouse, and I lived with my mother two doors down. And I was at my grandmother's house by myself, and my grandfather had passed away, 11 years earlier. But we were really close, you know, I was really young. I'm watching TV, and the dog kind of reacts to me like this chair in the corner, and I look over, and my grandfather's sitting in the chair. He stands up, he smiles, he walks across the room, and disappears to a wall. And I absolutely freaked out. I was probably younger than 14. And I ran over to my mom's house, told her what I saw. She kind of laughed about it. But, you know, I'm telling you, I saw it. So that's where it all started.
When you had this experience and you saw it and you said that they kind of laughed about it, how did you, at this age, as a young teenage boy, how did you communicate this? Was it frantic? Was it like, oh my God, I just saw Grandpa walk through the wall and I know he's dead? Or how did this conversation go?
Well, I ran over to my mom's house and she could just tell the look on my face, I was probably pale. And she goes, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I just saw Granddaddy walk across the room. And she was like, okay. And I'm like, I'm telling you, I just saw it. So that was about the end of the discussion.
Yeah. Was there any belief at all, or was it just kind of dismissed in kind of that parental sort of way?
I think she probably believed it, and the laugh wasn't about a non-believing. It was more of about if he was going to come back to anybody, it would have been me.
Okay. So kind of a hesitant, I kind of believe, kind of want to believe, not quite sure. You're a teenager. Go on your way.
Right.
That sort of a thing. Okay. Well, continue on.
So after that, it kind of, you know, died down. I never really even thought about paranormal. You know, and to look back, there may have been certain instances that did happen that it just never crossed my mind that it was paranormal, you know? Come years and years and years later.
Mm-hmm.
I always had an interest in it. But I guess that's about where it stopped, you know?
Sure.
I'll never forget, I was watching TV. It was probably 2006 when I watched TV one night and the show Ghost Hunters came on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I did not realize there was an actual show and people actually do this. So that right there took me on a quest, I guess to say, to find a team that does this. I have to do this. This is what I have to do. So I went out and I started scourging the area.
So you thought right away, I don't want to just watch this show. I want to be doing what they're doing in my area.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's what I need to do that. I have to do that. That's awesome.
What was the urge behind that? When you had that feeling, obviously you have an interest, but it's more than just an interest when someone sees something for the first time and goes, oh my God, I have to do that too. Had there been other incidents that were kind of just simmering in your mind other than the time you saw your grandfather that you were just kind of like, I know there's other things going on here, but I don't know how to prove it or investigate or anything of that nature.
Probably, and that what that was now that I know better, I had a friend, and we went and played with a Ouija board. And I'll never forget this, the day I died. We were sitting there with it, and his grandfather passed away too. And like I said, we were close to my grandfather, and it had been about around the same time, probably before I physically saw him. And we're playing with it and asking questions, and we asked this question, our grandfather is here. And the little planchet, like, did a circle and flipped, and then the board flipped. And I was like, okay, we're done here. I'm done. It was actually my grandmother's Ouija board. So I put it back in the box, took my grandmother's, and was like, that's never coming out again. I'm done with that.
Yeah.
So, but like I said, nothing from that point on, and there may have been, and it just never really, I never looked at it that way, until I saw the show and was like, this changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize people actually investigate. This changes everything.
Sure. So continue on. It's very interesting how this kind of sparked your interest in such a strong way.
Right. So I started looking. I found a couple of meetup groups. I'm like, oh, cool. It's like a meetup group where, we get together and do this. And we get together and it was like field trips. Hey, we're going to go to this place and, there's 20 of us and they'll talk to us a little bit. And it's during the daylight. And then we get to go roam around for a little bit and that's it. And I was like, this is not what I'm looking for. This is just a field trip to me. I want, truly investigating for real with about this many people. Mm-hmm. So then I go and I talk to somebody at the meetup group and they started a group. So I was kind of part of that. We had a falling out pretty quickly after it because, again, it wasn't where I wanted. It wasn't what I wanted. So I left. And I was getting a little discouraged. And I started doing some searching and realized, holy crap, there's a team like right down the road from me. And the person that founded the team, it was actually founded in 2004, was one of my paramedic instructors. So I called him up and I was talking to him. And I told him I was interested in it. So I sat down with him and we talked. And he was like, you know what? Yeah, you can absolutely join the team. I'm like, yes. Finally, I have found the team. So, we started going on investigations. Went on my first investigation, which is now one of our training areas. And they didn't have a whole lot of equipment. I mean, this is back when it was just in its infant stage,
Mm-hmm.
They had one camera hooked up to a laptop and like a voice recorder, maybe like an EMF detector. And that was about it. That was really about all they had. So we went to the place and I'll never forget this either. It was Robert E. Lee headquarters. So, I live in Virginia, in Central Virginia. So we have a lot of Civil War stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now a museum. It was part of a house. And they have like a cold storage, small little, I don't know, probably 12 foot long by about 5.5 foot tall. Like, well, of course there's. And I went in there just to look around the whole place because I've never been there. Well, they hadn't told me that there was a mannequin dressed in Fury clothing out there. So, this is my first true investigation. I go walking, turn the corner, and there's this thing. And I screamed like nobody's business. And they all started laughing. I was like, yeah, we've got to tell you that's there. I was like, well, thanks. Great. So I go on, we start doing this investigation. I'm going in, it's my absolute, first investigation, it's dark. And I'm looking at one area, and all of a sudden I see a shadow moving, and I get paralyzed. And I was like, holy crap, I just saw something. And I couldn't move at first, and I had to keep telling myself, look, this is what you wanted to do. You can't freeze up now, you have to go find that. So it took everything I had to get up and walk towards what I saw. I never saw it there, and obviously it had gone, but it took everything I had. And after that time, I was absolutely hooked. I took that team to a whole nother level. Within a month, we had a 4-channel DVR system with, I think, 6 or 8 cameras, all this other equipment, designed T-shirts. I was going all the way with it. And the founder was like, dude, this is awesome. So after a while, you know, I was doing a lot of work, setting up the cases, doing everything, because this is what I want. And he was like, dude, I'm just going to make you we're going to turn this in. It's not going to be a founder. It's going to be a manager, co-manager. And you're going to be the co-manager. And I was like, that's awesome. So I did that. And we kept on going. And he got to a point where he's like, look, I just don't have time to do this anymore. I am turning the team over to you. The team is now yours. I'm out. So I took over the team. I changed the symbol. We did all kinds of stuff. And we were hitting it hard. And, you know, and we still are. I still have my own team. It's called Tri-City Paranormal. We're a cat team. I mean, I worked hard for that.
When you started getting into investigating and you were starting to take the reins and starting to take some of those calls of people saying, hey, we got something going on here. We'd like someone to investigate. What were some of the surprises that you ran into at the beginning or that you continue to run into in that role?
Sure. So at the beginning of it, I was like, awesome, man, this is awesome. We get all these calls. And what we did is we get the calls and I'd set up for an investigation. Well, I soon realized that I needed to do some screening because we were spending a lot of time and a lot of money going to these places that were just, there was nothing. And their things that they were coming with us weren't validated. So I took a step back and I said, all right, we need to start screening. So at that point, when they would call, I would give them a phone call and say, okay, we're going to set up for this date. We're going to come out and just sit down and talk to you. Maybe bring a couple of pieces of equipment and start with, well, no, we didn't do that yet. Maybe bring a couple of pieces of equipment. That way we could see whether or not it requires investigation from there. So that kind of cut down on some of the crazy calls because there was a lot of them. There still are. And we got to the more valid case.
Tell me, in your experience, because I'm always curious about this, what to you, when you get those calls or an email, do you have any sort of telltale sign now, having done this for so many years, that the inquiry is legit, that this person is truly sincere in what's going on? And sometimes you have someone who truly believes something is going on, but it's more of a psychological issue that needs attention. Do you have any telltale signs that stand out to you when you get those inquiries that, yeah, there's definitely something going on here that you just know before you even get to that interview?
Somewhat. I have a key phrase that I listen for. And it's usually right off the bat, you're going to think I'm crazy, but...
Okay.
If they're saying that, it's because they have tried everything else and they're losing their mind and thinking that they are crazy. Mm-hmm. The ones that say, I'm telling you this is what's going on, well, then I can't help you because you've already made up your mind of what it is. Even though I can come in and probably tell you that's not what it is, you're going to fight me over it. So we're just going to discuss it all together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's those key words, you're going to think I'm crazy, but it usually means it's somewhat valid.
Okay. And the opposite question, and you kind of answered that there by saying when they're very confident in what, you know, here's what's going on, you don't need my answers, essentially. But are there any telltale signs to you? And it probably varies depending on the degree of the call. as far as what have been some of those that you've gotten that you just knew, okay, this person, this is not a haunting, and I just know it off the bat.
I've had ones that talking to them and, you know, over the phone, emailing, texting, whatever, and I'm like, all right, well, here are some explanations. Maybe this will help you out. And they go, no. This is what it is. This is what it is. Okay. How much experience do you have with this? Well, I've never... Okay, so listen to what I'm trying to tell you. You know, you're starting to turn me off to a point where, like I said, what's the point of us coming out if you're going to, you know, disagree with everything we tell you?
Yeah.
And then sometimes I'll just to prove a point, I will go out and do the interview, okay? And a couple of things I'll look for. What's in the movie? What's in your rack for your movies? What kind of TV shows do you watch? Because with all this you know, all the ghost shows and all the demonic stuff. Now I know where you're going with this. And now, to me, you're no longer valid.
That makes sense.
Because you're either thinking that you've watched a TV show, so you know what it is, or, especially now that we're a cat family, you think if we come in, we're bringing a TV show with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've had a couple of those where, you know, they try to turn it into a party. One of them tried to turn it. I thought they valid, you know, the parents had some valid issues and they were scared. So we decided, hey, we'll come out. You know, we want you here. So I show up and the parents are gone. And the guy who, the son who was older, was like, yeah, they went and got a hotel room. I was like, well, that was not the deal, you know. Well, the son comes home and we're setting everything up. I'm like, whatever, we'll just do this. And then their cousins start coming. They make a campfire out front. And they're like, hey, can we come in with you? And I went, that's when I said, we're done here. And I looked at my team. I said, pack the stuff. We're leaving. We're done. Because right then it was a party for them.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want any answers. They just wanted to go and ghost hunt with somebody that does it with the equipment. And I'm, that's not what I did.
Sure.
That's not what we do.
Sure. I would imagine that today, with the sheer amount of ghost programming that exists on television and online and everything, that there's more of that, where there's more of an atmosphere of individuals not really taking it in a serious fashion, more so viewing it as entertainment with the dead, if you will.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have some. And of course, with our case files, they kind of go up and down throughout the year. Right now, I'm getting cases in, you know, pretty much on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. So I've got quite a few of them right now that I'm working on.
So this is, it's very interesting with you being a paramedic. And when you started, when you joined this group, it was from someone who was also a paramedic and an instructor there.
Right.
Quite often, you know, in the medical field and any sort of field of that you know, professional sciences or anything of that nature, jumping into paranormal explanations for anything is not, you know, usually something that is accepted. You know, same with police work and things of that nature. You can't write in the police report, oh, it was just a ghost, or anything medical. So that's a real interesting, you know, collision essentially of two different areas where, for those of us, you know, who are very open-minded about this, can see how they can work together. But that must have been an interesting thing at the beginning to kind of meld together the world of medical and paranormal.
Yeah, so I'll tell you how that started, too. So, you know, we're going strong with the team, Tri-City Paranormal. And I start going, you know, these are two things I love. I love being a paramedic, and I love the paranormal. There's got to be a way I can integrate the medical side into this. And, the more I think about it, I'm like, you know, I wonder how our body reacts without us knowing in these environments. So that led me to borrow where I worked at the time, had extra heart monitors. So I borrowed one with permission, and I hooked myself up to it while we were in investigation. And, you know, it's fine. It goes fine. I get my baseline about 74, 75. And we're good. And I get up, I move, so it, you know, my heart rate goes up. And I sit down and it goes back down about 74, 75. And just sitting there talking, I'm watching it. And all of a sudden, it jumps to 100, 102. And I'm like, what's going on? And 30 seconds from there, I see a shadow go across the hallway. Well, immediately I go, okay, is our body able to subconsciously realize there's a change in an environment and automatically go into the fight or flight reaction without consciously us knowing about it?
Yeah.
Until that situation, you know, occurs where you see it. So that took me down, I guess, a rabbit hole of, wow, I've just opened up a whole new thing that nobody's really touched on. Now I'm going to start doing my research on that. So I started doing that. Then it kind of even turned a little bit more where, okay, well, now I'm going to use this equipment to try to communicate with it. And what I do is I put it out on my Paranormal Paramedic page. about a theory I have, a hypothesis I have. I call it the Ballastone method. But I digress. Let me go back to where I was. So I started doing that, and I got hooked up with an agent, and I started lecturing up and down the East Coast on the medical aspects of the paranormal, where I would talk about, you know, where you may think it's this, it's really a medical thing. When people start smelling perfume, if it's just one person smelling the perfume, it very well could be a what they call a micro seizure in the olfactory part of your brain. What that means is there's a little short circuit that controls your smell, and for some reason, that's the smell you smell. Now, if it's more than one person that smells at the same time, that's kind of out of the area. But that's a possibility. And I started talking about things like that people didn't really know. Just like, you know, a DXM or dextromethorphan, that's a lot of cough symptoms. For a while there, that was called paranormal drug, because if you took too much of it, people started seeing things.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing those lectures, and into that evolved the paranormal paramedic, where I was like, okay, now I have my paranormal team that does, you know, the home investigations and helps out people. Now I have the paranormal paramedic where I do my medical research, and I do the lectures and do events and stuff like that. So now I have two different avenues. So where I was going with the other thing, that's when I took the Ballastone method, which I just named after. I've been doing this specific experiment for about 6.5-7 years now. And what it is you take a piece of copper, okay, which is the second most conductive piece of metal there is, and I put the electrodes, the stickies from the heart monitor on it, okay? Because since spirits are all electrical energy, it should read. Well, I started doing that, and I have actually had positive results from it. It'll normally, when there's nothing around, it's just a flat line, okay? Mm-hmm. I've had it when I started asking questions, started touching this, or, you know, we had one at an old sanatorium that supposedly was somebody was killed in the bathroom, and I started saying, you know, ask questions, or sorry that you had to do that, and all of a sudden, it started having waves on it, like something was touching it. And I was like, oh my God, this works. This is awesome. There's no power in the place. So that can't be, it can't pick up any kind of power because there is none.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I started doing more with the copper and the monitor, as using that almost like another piece of paranormal equipment. And you can buy like smaller ones that are for like $100 and a piece of copper, you put the stickers on it, and you know, it's not as sensitive as the good ones, as the bigger ones, but you may be able to get some kind of reading from it. So that's kind of where I've gone with the paranormal paramedic side of stuff.
It's very interesting, the methods that you're coming up with. And what you're talking about earlier with the heart monitor, where suddenly your heart rate just accelerated. It's understandable if you were triggered by something to see that you know, that's psychological, that's fight or flight, that's you being conscious of it.
Sure.
But to have that happen, to have your physiological, you know, nature of your body being adjusted and changing as if it's reacting to something, but you're consciously just the same as you were 5 minutes prior mentally.
Right.
That's very, very interesting. It makes me wonder what the reactions would be and what sort of medical tests could be done, or what sort of results would come out of a situation where you have individuals who believe there is an attachment going on with them, or something as extreme as a possession or something of that nature. What are we going to see from that method or others? I'm sure these are other things that have run through your mind as you've done your research.
So, yeah, here's some other things that I've worked on, too, with some of my experiments.
Mm-hmm.
I have what they call a wireless electroencephalograph, so it reads the brain waves. It's okay. I want a better one that will be more accurate, but that's going to show you brain waves. Okay, so if I get the brain waves to match what my heart's doing, is my brain telling my heart what to do, or is it something outside, you know, tampering with the physiological changes of everything? the other thing is that then you can start taking that EEG machine and bring it to people who you know, some of these psychics, put on them and see what changes when they start going to these places. Go, okay, this is what's here. What changes? What in their body changes for them to see it and other people's not?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? That's where I want to go with it. I really do. I think there is a corroboration somewhere where somewhere physiological our body does react to this stuff. We just haven't tapped into it all the way yet.
And once, because obviously someone can tell you there's something going on here verbally, but
right.
being able to measure it, I guess it just confirms what a lot of us already believe and already know, but it's another piece of evidence, I guess, so to speak, that can be pointed to when someone is questioning, you know, what's going on here? Is something going on here? Is that kind of where you're going with it? What to you, having that sort of evidence, having medical evidence and some of these tests that actually show results, what to you is the ultimate goal of having that? What would be the end game there? What's
the purpose? The end game is twofold. One, yeah. I now have another piece of evidence that can corroborate other things that are happening if it all happens at the same time.
Okay.
Right? The other is to go, hey, look, there really is something going on. Now what we need to diverge is it truly paranormal or is it the environment that's changing our physiological outcome?
Mm-hmm.
What is truly making it? Can we explain it or is it truly paranormal?
Sure.
So that's kind of where I'm going with it. I mean, it can go as far as I'm looking into trying to do something where a non-invasive blood sugar test to see if your blood sugar rises or drops, because that's some part of the fight or flight as well, is that your sugars will kind of, you know, go up and down.
That makes sense.
So it expands. It's large. The problem is that the high-tech equipment is very expensive.
Sure, sure.
You know, I just did last season of Ghost Nation. I brought in an EKG machine and hooked up. You know, I don't know if y'all saw it or not. Put it on Day Tango. He actually, I had it happen. He felt fine, but his heart rate jumped. And right after that, they heard footsteps upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. But that piece of equipment right there that I had, I got as a loaner, was $60,000.
Yeah.
Nobody has that kind of money.
Sure.
You know, but you can buy ones off of eBay. The old ones that do work, I want everybody to know they do work, like the LifePak 10s or whatever. They're old. They're like $300, but it works. It will do the same thing. You can even, like I say, get the portable ones that are like $100. They may not work as good. They may not be as accurate, but they will work.
Mm-hmm. And in about 10 years, these will be $300 on eBay as well.
Right. And actually, gen. If you want to go even cheaper, just not get as much information, is you can go to these CVS, these drugstores, and get what they call the pulse oximeter that goes on your finger. And mm-hmm. that reads your oxygen saturations and your pulse. It'll do the same thing. It just won't be in a waveform. It'll just give you a number.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Chris Balachone and his paranormal paramedic career. We'll hear more about his career and also life as a paranormal investigator. We'll ask, has Chris ever had any paranormal experiences as a paramedic in the field? What happened at a historic building in Williamsburg when he was doing a security check? Looking back at some of Chris's experiences as a paramedic, does he believe there's ever any sort of supernatural intervention that's taking place as people fight for their lives? What shocking paranormal experience did Chris have at St. Albans? Is there ever a time where a location is too dangerous to investigate? And is there ever a way to truly protect someone from a paranormal attack during an investigation? Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
It's a long way back. The phantom scream that lies in wait for. Go back. All the ways that I memorized, let go.